What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets powered by FTN. I'm your host, Chris Meany. Thanks, as always, for taking the time to hang out. And no disrespect to all the beautiful minds over at FTN, but I got one of the best in the business here, Jake Seeley. You probably already know the Twitter handle, but if you don't, give your head a shake, pal, as our buddy Pat Mayo likes to say, all in, kid. He has a ton of stuff over at The Athletic. Football, of course, and baseball. I was taking a look before I came on. He got bold predictions, my guys, rankings, projections, auction values. And dude, I know you're so busy, especially like NFL free agency and draft and prepping. So appreciate you taking the time to jump on here today. And yesterday is a super busy day for you too, because it seemed like there was just 100 baseball injuries. You probably had to go in and mess around with all your projections, right?
And especially all on the pitcher side of things. Oh my God. It was like closers, those people say, but also like just pitchers in general. But yeah, it was ridiculous. And then today, before even joining you, like the Stephen Brault news, not that he's a big one. It's just you and I were texting about this. Football is so easy. Football is plug in. All right, targets go to here, touches go here, yeah. And you just waterfall it. Like baseball is like, all right, well, I took out this pitcher, but it might not be somebody getting 140 innings. So it's going to be this guy for 90 and this guy for this one. And now this guy's moved into a swing role, and it's just, it takes five times the amount as long to update baseball projections. I still love you guys, but like you can see, I'm already ready for the season to start. I could be done with this
and be easy on Jake. I always say this, when we used to work together, a couple different companies doing lots of shows together. You put in a lot of work, man, a lot of hard work, and doing those little projections. You're right. Like bro, whatever. But you know, he's a sleeper for some people. He's kind of trending up. He could be a decent asset in season long leagues. And you take the time to go in and project maybe an uptick in innings, a downtick in innings, but you're right. Yesterday I saw, well, over the past week, Jake, I've seen what, Springer, Pearson.
Haven't touched him yet.
Yates, Tatis. I think the injury is minor for Tatis. Zach Gallen, who I love, and I was going to keep him in the League of Leagues with Mayo, and for a 14th round. And then I see that he has a hairline fracture, and he did it swinging a bat. Bader, yeah. 4 weeks. Kyle Freeland, man, am I missing anyone? Yes, I'm missing tons.
The closers.
The closers.
My camera's off. Wait. Did Rob already adjust for me in picture, or can I fix my camera? Because I don't want to screw up Rob over there. I just realized that.
I think you may screw up Rob, but I think he's got a crop so that your whole.
I'll leave it for now. But I just realized, like, you know my setup. I'm like, it's swung to the side for some reason. Anyway, you're forgetting Leclerc. Although that
That's
might be
right.
Some old news for some people. And then Kirby Yates. For the season. So those were the big things with the closer situation. Apparently Jordan Romano, which is what a lot of people were saying there. But the Leclerc one is the more hectic one, because who the heck knows is going to be
shit
like.
Show.
Yeah, that's really what it is. It's like Tampa Bay, but with worse pitchers.
Yeah, Matt Bush season. It's been a long time since.
If Hernandez was healthy, is he supposed to be ready for the start of the season? But yeah, and it's not as cut and dry for football, unfortunately. But yeah, what did you list, like 10 players?
10 players.
The past
yeah.
Week?
Yeah. I really like Romano, Jordan. He's got some stuff. I was interested in him anyways. I know Yates is really good, and he was going to keep that role as long as he stayed healthy, but it's been some stuff popping up with him. But I do like Romano. He's got some nasty stuff, man. Swing and strike stuff, which is pretty solid, pretty elite.
He jumped to 14 for me in relievers ahead of the Tampa Bay guys. Ahead of
14.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, look at it. So yeah, I have him. I mean, Yates is gone for the season. I mean, unless we find, yeah. I mean, that's the assumption right now. Mm-hmm. So there you go. I got to update his holds. I still have his holds at 24. Damn it.
He even does holds, people. I like it.
No. Al Melchior helped me with those. I'll give Al all the credit there. But, you know, a sub-4 ERA, a solid, not great, but okay. But I have him for 26 saves, jumping up, getting almost all of Yates. I still have a little bit of a mix. But when you have 26, his numbers are going to be a little bit better than Matt Barnes, who's only going to get 24 saves maybe. And then you have Soria in Atlanta or Arizona, who might not have the job the entire time. Nick Anderson, I mentioned with the Rays, don't know what's going on there. Rodriguez is going to be interesting for Pittsburgh, because here's what I'm going to say. This is why saves suck. And you know this, Chris, is because Rodriguez is on the arguable worst team in the league. he still could get 30 saves because every single game they win might be like 3-2. Like they're not winning. They're not blowing anybody out. So you could see him get 30 saves and end up as a top 10 closer just because any win they eke out is going to be eked out win.
Jeez, man. You're right. Saves are a crapshoot. And especially recently over the past couple of years, I mean, a lot of teams are taking on the Tampa Bay Rays model of just whoever's ready and ready to go. Heck, your Nick Anderson could close a game, and then the next day he could open up a game for the Rays. You just don't know what they're going to do. One guy, since we're on closers, our guy, I want to give a shout out to Matty Wood from FTN. He does a lot of high stakes drafts. He told me about Tanner Scott for Baltimore about 4 weeks ago, and then an injury happened, and now it looks like he potentially could get the job there. But again, not a great ball team in Baltimore, so you don't know how many saves opportunities he's going to get, but he was hitting triple digits on the gun I saw, and this guy's got some crazy good stuff too. But believe it or not, we are here to talk about the New York Mets, but I wanted to talk about the projections that you have over at The Athletic. And what, last time I checked, a dollar a month? The Athletic, it's basically free now.
Right now, yeah. They did it for NFL free agency, so I don't know how long that lasts. I don't know why I put that in quotes, but I don't know how long it lasts because it's, yeah, it was for NFL free agency, which is kind of still going. You and I talked about T.Y. Hilton signed right before we did this show. Mm-hmm. So as of now, but jump in there before it's too late, question mark.
Yes.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
yeah, get in on it. I mean, we got a pretty good draft kit as well, but you can for a buck, are you kidding me? You just get all the information across multiple sites and a lot of great people over at The Athletic as well. So yeah, we'll get to maybe a couple bowl predictions or a couple of your guys towards the end, but I mean, get on it, guys. It's a great price, and Jake will be there all year updating your all projections.
Live updating my holes right now to make up.
All right, so the New York Mets, fun offseason, sure. I know you've complained about them before in the past about not spending money and making moves, but they bring in Francisco Lindor as a big move. That's solid, right? James McCann, Carlos Carrasco, but
they still really haven't spent much money.
For Carrasco. No, they haven't. You wanted Springer, right? You wanted George Springer, who's dealing with something right now, but you didn't get him. Yeah, but Carrasco also dealing with something. What, he's got a strained hammy and elbow soreness. Surprise. Yeah, that's tough. Jake is hard on the Mets already. Hey, it's been a fun offseason for the other New York team, right? The Giants. What do you make of them? Sidebar for a second. What do you make of the Giants offseason?
This is a joke, in my opinion. This is somebody who's trying to salvage his job, and hopefully all this works out, because that's all it is. So I got a big argument with our friend Greg Sussman, who we used to work with back in the day, and I was crapping on it, but I was crapping on it for a specific reason. Like, the Kenny Golladay and Adoree Jackson signings can be Philly needs. It's not mutually exclusive from it also being negative equitable value or negative return on investment or just poor money management, because you could have got, instead of Golladay and Adoree Jackson, and that's it, you could have got Corey Davis, one of the other corners who were signing for like 1 year, 2 years. And I understand part of the argument is, okay, well, they are not going to be in the free agency next year with everybody's going to be debating. That's fine. I get it. But the point is, you could have done Corey Davis for a discount anyway. He signed multiple years. You could have signed a corner that was along Adoree's level for similar money lower wise, and then got the third person, whether it was Dalvin Thompson coming back with Leonard Williams or addressing the offensive line. That's my issue. You could have got three players. They only got two because he's trying to save his job. So I get it, but it could still be poor money management at the same time.
Yeah, I would agree with that take. And something that we said last year with Drew Lock, like it was time for Drew Lock. I think Daniel Jones, like, you give him Kenny Golladay, and if Saquon can stay healthy, you gotta see something from him. You gotta see.
No, it's what I said about you. You're right. I know what you're referencing is, and the only reason, so Drew Lock got hurt, and they had missed a little bit of time. But also the bigger issue was Cortland Sutton missed a ton. The entire season. Yeah. So what I said, what you're referencing, for people that don't know, is last year I said, if this doesn't work out for Drew Lock, John Elway is going to be carrying his bags out of the stadium with his own bags. So that's what we're saying now, is that yes, if Daniel Jones doesn't work this year, well, he's still got two more years on his contract. So I guess technically he might still be around for one more, but Dave Gettleman's out, and Daniel Jones might just get rid of him anyway at this point, or find somebody to replace him. So yeah, all the excuses are gone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like what they're trending. They're trending in the right direction, doing some things. I mean, the Eagles are not doing anything. Washington is
improved. That's how much money they have. That's why.
Yeah, they're strapped. Maybe next
year. Although the Bears and the Eagles seem to be, I'm going to steal this from Andy Behrens, it seems to be the only two teams that don't know you can manipulate the salary cap. Like the Giants went in over the cap. Yeah. They figured out Solder, but they didn't even do Solder right up until the deadline. They tagged Williams and then signed Williams, and still that was supposed to put him right up against the cap, and still signed Galladay, still signed Adoree Jackson, still reworked Solder, still brought in Kyle Rudolph. They're still making these signings, and it's like, that's, again, you and I talk about it all the time. I always reference that. It's cash flow. It's not salary cap. Salary cap means nothing. You can manipulate it. Right. Look at what the freaking Saints are doing, and I'm sure the NFL is going to do something about that, but point being, the Bears and the Eagles are seemingly out there the only ones that are like, well, it's the salary cap. I guess we're screwed.
Yeah.
Like,
Howie Roseman, overrated, maybe, potentially. I mean, missing guys like Terry McLaurin and DK Metcalf in the draft and not figuring it out is puzzling.
Speaking of which,
I told Rob that we would be 30 talking minutes
baseball.
And we haven't.
Oh, 30 minutes and baseball?
Mentioned the Mets.
All right. Last thing on football, Chris.
Yeah.
You said Terry McLaurin. I love what Washington's doing. I put money on Washington to win the division, to win the NFC, and to win the Super Bowl. I know I'm getting one, at least one of those. They're winning the division.
Yeah, I think they win the division too. I mean, the defense is phenomenal, right? All they need to do is score, 20 points, and they're going to be in most games. Yeah, Curtis Samuel, they're going to draft some guys. Gibson looks like a player. I like the Fitz call. Like, I like the signing, right? I mean, he's near the end, but he can win you games. He just has never won a playoff game. That's it.
He hasn't played in a playoff game. That's what's crazy about it.
Yeah, this is his ninth team. I think he'll play in a playoff game this year. We'll see. It is more of a competitive division.
He might end up having more jerseys behind him than Brad Ziegler has baseballs at the end of his career. That's good. That's for a very small section of our listening audience that understands that reference.
Yes. Shout out, Brad.
Shout out all three of you that know what I'm talking about.
We used to do a show together. Okay, we are having too much fun here. Let's talk Mets. let's bring the fun down and talk the New York Mets. Yeah, 10-1 to win the World Series, +550 for the NL pennant. +150 for the NL East, and what is their win total? I had it down here, 110. That doesn't seem right.
No,
New York Mets win total is like 90 something. Yeah, New York Mets
still too high.
Free parlay and prop shop over at ftnbets.com. Check it out. So yeah, it is
90.5. Oh, it went down.
Yeah, it went down. Tough division though, right? Like the Braves, I still think are the best division in this division. Best, I think they're the best team in this division.
Question about it. And that's, I was laughing, and not just because, you know, I said the reason I hated the Mets was I didn't hate the Mets. I hated the Wilpons. And you and I talked about this all the time. I said I'd root for them once they finally got rid of the Wilpons. Stop acting like you're the Tampa Bay Rays living in New York. Like, that's the problem. So now that they're spending money, now that they have a real owner, and again, I go back to, they didn't really spend money. They brought in McCann. I know they want to extend Lindor, and I know they want to extend Conforto, but Conforto is a Scott Boras, and I don't even know if that's going to happen, because of Scott Boras, he's not going to let it happen. He's going to let him hit free agency. But the win total originally, I think it was 92 or 93.5. And I just laughed at that because I'm with you. It's still the Braves. And yeah, what look at last year's Mets team and look at this year's Mets team. And it's Lindor and McCann. And then what else is really different? Nothing. Carrasco at the time could have been a factor, but Carrasco was offsetting Syndergaard anyway, who they lost last year. So you could have said, and Carrasco betting to stay healthy was going to be a long shot. And I'm not saying ha-ha, because I would have loved to see. I'm a Carrasco fan.
Me too.
I would have loved to see him stay healthy, but it's DeGrom and a lot of question marks. You know, Marcus Stroman, everybody's talking about his new pitch, but is he still going to be the low strikeout guy he's always been, just kind of more of a control option, or is he going to take that next step forward? He's a free agent too after this year, but there's a lot of questions in the rotation. Their bullpen looks solid. It was already pretty solid last year because Diaz bounced back and, you know, they had pieces step up there. So it's a fine team. But if you're talking about win totals, I just don't know where you say they go from. They finished third last year, correct? Like, I remember it got pretty tight towards the race.
Fourth, actually. But yeah.
Fourth. You got
down the stretch,
they
lost 7 of 10. But yeah, it did get tight. The Braves are good. The Marlins, I don't know. Like, they got some young pieces, but they were competitive last season, surprisingly. The Phillies, they got issues too, but they're still going to be a competitive
team. But they're the same Phillies.
And then they got the Nats, right? It's a tough division.
Why is everybody discounting the Nats? And the Nats did what they did last year with Scherzer having an off year.
Right.
And
yeah.
And also, I'm just going to say, in general, I think we're doing it. Everybody's doing it. There's not a grain of salt. There's like a canister of salt thrown on the 2020 season. Like, how much are we going to put into weight with a lot of things? But you still get a sense of these teams are very similar. the Mets addition, the biggest addition might be Lindor versus what they were doing with Amad Rosario. Like that, let's just say that's the biggest discrepancy there. So you say that, is that really good for what percentage wise would be what, 7, 8, 9 more wins? So I know he's one of the best in the game, but yeah, the win total seemed high. 90.5, I'd probably stay away from now. I know you and I used to run through all 30 teams.
Yeah,
but this would be one of the ones that I would probably step aside from.
I probably, I'm going to do that again, Fantasy Pros. I think I'm leaning under two, just slightly, probably missed the boat on the 92.5, right? I mean, that was the time to get in and drop on the 90. But I just think a lot of these teams are going to beat up on each other and the Braves come away. Even when we had David Jones, who from FTN, he's a big Braves guy. He was a little hesitant on the Atlanta total just for the same reason, right? There's just a lot of the teams are competitive and they're just going to kind of beat up on each other, and the Braves are at 91.5, so he was like, it's basically, it's got to be perfect. And that's the big question that everyone has with the Mets. Can they stay healthy? Like DeGrom is a stud, he's awesome. Right. But Stroman is a guy who has been staying healthy, but to your point, not a big strikeout guy. I mean, he's going to come with a sub-4 ERA, I believe. Maybe if he has, 180 innings, he gets to 170K maybe. But then there's all these other question marks. And Syndergaard, I'm seeing, maybe best case scenario, end of May for that guy. I think he's ahead of the schedule. But even still, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. What kind of a leash are they going to have on Syndergaard when he comes back?
And let's talk about Syndergaard as a whole. So from a fantasy perspective, which ties into his real life. So 2 years ago now, I'm trying to think. So, well, before the 2019 season, so 2+ years. So I was talking with Nick Pollock, Pitchers List, and, he's huge into pitchers. His name is Pitchers List, but former pitcher. And we were talking about Syndergaard, and I remember in 2019 why I said I wasn't taking him, and we were agreeing on the same thing, is he's predictable. He throws too many fastballs. When he gets behind, he throws a fastball, and a lot of times his fastball flattens out. It doesn't really have a lot of movement, and he just becomes predictable. And I think that's the biggest thing, is you have somebody throws 100 miles an hour. Unlike DeGrom, doesn't really have the off-speed stuff that he mixes in enough. Like, when you're throwing a 92 effing slider, throw it more, dude. What are you doing? Like, do you know how hard it is to hit a slider going 85, let alone 92? Yeah. So I don't understand Syndergaard. So hope maybe this time off, maybe he gets back to it. Because if you look at a success from 2000, I think it was 17 or 18, where he had his whatever his best
17
season was.
Yeah.
It was 17. There was a lot more strikeout percentage. And yeah, so if he gets back to that, by the way, I pulled it up while we were doing this. Pecota? Are they drunk? They have Atlanta at 83 and the Mets at 93 for wins.
Oh, wow.
I would smash the over on 83 for Atlanta. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'd love if that was a betting line in Vegas. I'd be throwing the house on it.
I agree. I just think there's more stability in Atlanta's lineup. Like, they just have their 1-4 is just so rock solid with bats, like guys that get on base. I like the Mets bullpen more than Atlanta's. And Atlanta's got some question marks inside the rotation too. Just need some guys to stay healthy. But I just think that they're a slightly better team. Like, there's less questions when it comes to the Braves as opposed to the Mets. So yeah, the Syndergaard I'm looking to, I mean, the 2017 season was just the 30 innings, but the 2016, I think, was the 2.6 ERA. It was the solid season. And
a long time ago now.
Yeah. It was a long time ago. I still remember being in college in Toronto when that big trade went down with
that year. I was like, holy crap, you're not that young.
And everyone was freaking out, like, oh my god, I can't believe they traded Syndergaard. Oh no. But he has been a bit of a pain, and in fantasy too. Like, would you touch him? Would you draft him? Because, like, what's best case, 100 innings?
I'm throwing $1, $2 on him in auction, and I'll take him around the same spot as Chris Sale. The difference between the two of them is I actually think Syndergaard's safer to come back healthy than Sale at this point of their careers. But I think Sale has more upside if he stays healthy. Like, if you told me they both get 80 innings, I would take Sale's 80 innings over Syndergaard's 80 innings.
Yeah, me too.
But I think Syndergaard's a better bet to be able to stay in there. So I'm looking at 2016, by the way. He was basically fastball slider, and then the change in curve were about mixed and even. So where he's done is he's been ditching, especially 2019, ditched the slider for a lot more changeups. And the changeups just aren't working. I don't know. Because the changeups and the slider come the same speed, you know, just from a pitcher, for everybody out there, like from a pitching perspective, slider is dangerous because you throw it 6-7 miles an hour slower than your fastball, and it looks a little bit like it from the jump off. But if you're throwing it as the same speed as the changeup and you throw them back to back, you've already got the hitter adjusting for that speed. So now they're just going to stay off the moving slider, or they're going to crush your curve or your changeup, which is kind of what was happening.
Yeah. And again, coming back from Tommy John, you just don't know. I don't want to compare him to Shohei Ohtani, but when he came back from Tommy John, the guy couldn't pitch at all last year, and it's taken a long time. And now the velocity is back up, triple digits. Last year when he was throwing, he couldn't. It was almost like he was just aiming. He was trying to pinpoint his location, and he was.
And that's what Syndergaard already does, is aim. Yeah. By the way, Syndergaard was hitting 96 in the bullpen 2 days ago.
96. 3 days ago.
Yeah. So I know that's what you want. You want 100.
I know he's itching.
I mean, it's his first bullpen.
His first one. Like I said, end of May. I have no problem like a buck or two on these guys either. I think the upside is there. I stayed away from them in all the drafts that I've done so far. I don't like to just stash and deal. I think you just need to be in a deeper league. It all depends on your settings. But
there are positives. There are things I do like about the Mets. So, when you want to actually talk about things.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the good
negative
things
so far.
But first, I want to just say, I mean, there's not much to say about DeGrom. DeGrom is 4-1 to win Cy Young. He's plus +550 to lead baseball in K's.
If you're in a snake, how early are you taking him?
That was my question for you. So he's got 104K last year, was second in baseball. And then the last time there was a full season, 255, he was fourth. I think that Bieber is going to come down just a little bit. He's going to have to play outside of that weak division a little bit more this year. And I think there's some red flags with Gerrit Cole, but I don't mind the plus +550. The worst is like to win the Cy Young 4-1, and then you got to wait all year for your money. It's tough. Like a lot of these props and stuff, but that is the one question. So I was going to ask you, like, if you're sitting there at five and say, you know, the studs went off the board, what we got, Acuna, Tatis, Mookie Betts, Soto at five, I would go Trout. I think I start thinking about him at six. You know, Turner, do you want the speed? I would go maybe six or Turner. I'm not even a big Turner guy, but I get it in roto leagues. You want that speed. It's hard to come by after the first couple rounds. What about you? Where would you take him? Like if you were at six and he was available and all those bats were off the board, would you take him then?
Fifth. I'd take him with the fifth. One, two, three,
Trout?
Four. Yeah. No, ahead of Betts. I actually have Trout over Betts. I think Trout's starting to feel like the LeBron James didn't win the MVP when stupid Derrick Rose did.
And he was fourth in voting, which is the worst showing of his career.
I know. It's just because it was, okay, we know you're amazing. We're tired of it. Like, that's just kind of what it is. Mike Trout, like, good God. Like, we're really going to do this because he doesn't steal 30 bases anymore? Like, shut up. No. That's my opinion on Mike Trout. If you want to let Mike Trout drop to me at six, I would love that. Yeah, I saw him do that in one draft. I've seen eight, nine.
I saw him in like 11 in one draft in a high stakes.
People
league.
Are just tired. It's fatigue. They're tired of his amazing. It's
silly.
I think LeBron's a good example is because they set their own bar. So basically, they're so elite that when they fall 98th percentile of themselves, all of a sudden people are like, well, he's not as good as we used to know. Like, he's still flipping amazing. Only reason Acuna is even first is because he has a legitimate chance of going 40-40. That's really what it comes down to. But yeah, I would still take Trout over Betts. It's a slim margin. I have him back-to-back outfielder 3 and 4. So if you want to take Betts in front of DeGrom, but I'll compare this fantasy football again. I'll compare him to a wide receiver. I'll compare him to Davante Adams or Michael Thomas from the year before. But I think that's the good example is how many times is the number one wide receiver in fantasy football repeat? And how many times does the number one starting pitcher repeat? Like, DeGrom's been there, but Gerrit Cole was also there. Max Scherzer was also there. So, you know, you get that, and there is a bit of safety to it, but you have to understand it's like taking that wide receiver if, God, I don't even want to say the words, but I'll dance around it. If something were to happen to DeGrom this season, that's why I've often been taking, like, a Scherzer to bounce back, or even you said Bieber's been falling back, and he has been a little bit, but Bieber back there, I think Bueller's going to be a nice value in the third after what happened with his last start, especially because now everybody always panics in spring training. But I still think there's a lot of tier two starting pitchers you can get after going hitter that I've been avoiding DeGrom, but I understand taking them there.
Yeah. Like some of the, I mean, Giolito, Darvish, I'm okay with Darvish. Like, I know there's a little bit of risk. I'm fine with him.
I'm fine with him, but I have him zero. I have him in zero teams. About him. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But there's just something gnawing the back of my mind of like, okay, you got it. That was your best case.
I know.
And it's not happening again.
There is something there. I usually don't go with the term pocket aces a lot of these people are talking about lately. In the Great Baseball Invitational, I picked 14th. I went Bauer and Darvish. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, am I going to regret this? But I think I'm fine with it. I we'll see how the team plays out. You know, I was lacking a little bit of speed, but I think I made up for it a little bit later. But I just left pitcher alone for a while after that, and I just started to grab some relievers. But
did you say Bauer and who was the other one?
Darvish.
Oh, okay. In the labor auction, I actually went trip aces. I went Bieber, Bauer, Scherzer.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, here's why. And this is all relative to everybody out there. So Bieber went for 37. DeGrom and Cole were 47, 48. So that's already a discount right there. Like $10 off being basically just on their heels. But the bigger discount was I got Bauer for 28 and Scherzer for 27. So
wow.
That to me was like, I basically spent 55 on two instead of 48 on one. Like that's why I did it.
People just seem sour on Bauer and
on Bauer.
They do.
No, it's just the rhyming.
I know.
It's because he won't get the COVID vaccination. That's why.
Yeah, it's one of the
people
reasons.
Hate him.
I think he's fine. He's going to be great in LA, beating up on all those brutal teams and pitching in that ballpark. But okay, for the rest of the Mets, so DeGrom ADP 5, we both like him as a top 5 guy. We're willing to spend up and grab him. Lindor ADP 18, shortstop 4. Pete Alonso 54. I'm using ADP in the last 4 weeks of NFBC.
That's my
54.
Guy.
Pete Alonso, first baseman 6. 53 home runs rookie season, 16 and 57 games last year too. So on pace for what, 45-ish, roughly 40-ish. The K rate, the walk rate,
45.
The K rate, the walk rate. Identical. It was the same. The average dip a little bit, but small sample. I think he's back up to 260. What do you think of Pete Alonso? Because this time last year, Jake, people were drafting him pretty early. End of first, early second?
The tail end of the first round. So that's somebody I have almost 100% rostered.
Yeah, love the draft spot.
Yeah, basically because – so there's three guys, and the other two are – I know we're not talking about the Cubs, but there's three guys for bounce backs. Actually, four if you want to clue. So I'll give you the four. And this is the 2020 situation. So Pete Alonso, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant. Actually, five. I'll take Javier Baez, too. But the other one that I was in was Yoan Moncada. All these guys, all five of them last year, drafted significantly higher than they're getting drafted this year. And everybody's looking at 2020 and being like, oh, my God. Like, whatever. Like, no. Where's the excitement from last year? Like, we're really putting that. And it's funny because I say that it's like people look at 2020 and saying, okay, we can't put too much weight into it. But then they argue against these guys. Like, so which is it? Are you counting 2020 or you're not? But to what you were just saying, and the reason I knew it was 45 is because he's in my bold prediction. As I said, Pete Alonso is the only 50 home run hitter again. Because if you look at it, yeah, he was still on pace for 45. Disappointment. On pace for 45.
I know.
The ISO dropped 60 points from 323 to 260. He can get that back. Line drive percentage, almost identical. Ground ball, almost identical. Fly ball was actually up a little bit. And his exit velocity dropped from 90.7, oh my God, to 90.2. Oh, wow. So the real thing that if you look at his barrels per plate appearances, or percentage-wise, went from 9.5 to 7.9. So that's a little bit, that's 1.6 points in percentage. That's a little bit of a dip, but he's admitted it. He admitted that he was off a little bit last year. And again, that all included was still a drop of 8 home runs over a full season. You can't tell me he gets half of those back. And if he gets half of those back, it's 49, 50 home runs. So yeah, I have a ton of Pete Alonso. I think he's back. I think he's been, where's his ADP? You said 45?
54. 54 over the last 4 weeks NFBC.
That should have been my bold prediction. He hits more home runs than his ADP.
Yeah, that would have been pretty good. I'm into him too. I like the price last year was a little hesitant. You know, you got the sophomore and then pitchers adjusting to him and then him in year three adjusting to them. And, you know, you make some adjustments yourself. But I love the price. I thought it was fair last year. And the fact that he is on average the 54th pick off the board, the first baseman position is not great anyways. You know this, everyone knows it's for me, it's either you grab a guy or you wait it out and you can find some value a little bit later on, but you're stuck with an average first baseman. I like a lot of Pete Alonso, and then you put Lindor into that lineup, which bat what, two, maybe lead off sometimes, and then it's another guy who's going to get on base for him. So
well, and you mentioned it too with Alonso is the pitcher's adjusting. So one of the things, the biggest discrepancy you'll see from 2019 to 2020 was fastballs. He obliterate, like destroyed, yeah, murdered, buried, whatever you want to say, 31.7 value on fastballs in 2019. That's a number you don't see. That's destroying fastballs. It was 4.4 last year. That's an enormous drop off. But what you're saying is it came around a little bit towards the end of the season. Again, abbreviated season, but the pitchers were adjusting. They stopped letting him murder fastballs, and they started letting him see a lot more off speed stuff, and he started chasing it a little bit more because that's all he was getting. So this is what I said. He admitted it. Become a little bit more discerning at the plate. Let some of those pitches go by, even if they're strikes, just so you can square up a little better, which goes back to the barrels per plate appearance percentage. Is he's going to be a little bit just, it doesn't even have to be 30 on the fastballs. Just be a little bit more discerning, and he's going to be back to one of the best hitters in baseball.
He's 12-1 to lead the league in home runs. I like that.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I like that too. And 22-1 RBIs are whatever, but 22-1 to lead the league in RBIs. Like Lindor is 13-1 MVP, 20-1 most hits, and I saw plus 10,000 to lead the league in home runs. I don't know if that was a misprint, but
plus
I was like, 10,000. My goodness. He's got a little bit of pop in his bat too. Like he could hit 30.
I could tell you
gonna hit. Like, what is he going to hit? I think he's going to hit 30, Lindor. But he's not
going
to 40 and 45-ish.
That's right. I guess I could see that. I'm trying to find out. I'm looking for where I have Lindor in home runs. Let's see. I have him.
Yeah, like how many do you have for Lindor?
30 on the nose. So there you go.
30? Yeah. But stolen bases, 20? 18? You're probably cautious a little bit with your projections.
I'm back. I froze. My wonderful computer. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. What do you got? Yeah.
Low system resources. I tried to pull it up. So Lindor, 30 home runs, 19 stolen bases.
19 stolen bases. Okay. Yeah. I type in Lindor in the FTNbets.com. Again, the free prop shop and home runs. He's got, it's 10,000. It's ridiculous. Plus 8,000 points bet. William Hill is plus 6,000. So I mean
at shortstop, I have him fifth for home runs at shortstop in general. So yeah, can see the plus 10,000. There's like he's not going to get.
There's no chance. Like there's no chance he's not going to lead the league in home runs. But if you're into long shots,
top 10,
sure, yeah, whatever. But I think Pete Alonso for 12-1. I think that's an interesting bet. So the rest of the Mets here, I guess. I'm going to roll through them ADP wise. Conforto 71, Diaz 78, Jeff McNeil. I like Jeff McNeil. I mean, average, right? He's one of those. He's not a sexy pick, but he's a safe. He's not going to hurt you anywhere. He gets on base. He's just a great hitter. 88.
Everybody still doubts him.
Yeah, I don't know why. Dominic Smith 127.
Because he didn't get to the majors till he's 26. That's why.
Whoop-de-doo. Stroman 199, JD Davis 260, and then Nemo 266. Out of all those guys,
Jeff McNeil's a good example of is Jacob DeGrom. People doubted Jacob DeGrom at the beginning because he wasn't a highly touted pitcher.
Right,
he was a little bit late arrival, and it's getting over that perception. So I think that's where you find like Ketel Marte. Like people he was never supposed to do anything. And so because you don't have these names which have been hyped for years, or hey, watch this guy or stash him in your dynasty or whatever type of stuff, and then they have success, people are just always hesitant. You know, somebody used to play for the Mets, Justin Turner. How good has he been? I mean, now at this point, he's kind of like the at-bats are going to hurt him because he doesn't have the full-time role anymore. But how many years in a row was it, I'll grab Justin Turner at third base and be happy about it?
He's going to hit 300. He's going to hit near the top of the lineup. And he's not going to steal a lot of bags, but he's not going to kill you anywhere else. Yeah, it's a good comparison. I like McNeil. I think he's a fine asset. What about any of these other guys? Like Conforto, is he a target of you? Dominic Smith, Nemo at 266, like leading off. Is there any appeal?
No, so I like Conforto. I do believe Conforto. This is the breakout is what people are hoping for. I think he is somebody that was somebody who was supposed to fulfill his promise and did. My issue with Dominic Smith is I keep comparing him to Kyle Schwarber. I don't know that he plays full games. And if you get three at bats and that starts happening somewhat consistently because he gets yanked for defensive replacement, because they have 8 billion options now with like Kevin Pillar and Jonathan Villar, and I know he's mostly infield, but I'm just saying like they're moving people around. They could throw JD Davis back into the outfield where he's actually better defensively than he is at third base. But I'm just saying like I'm worried about the Schwarber situation where it's not even the lefty righty situation. It's just the defensive. And if he's getting yanked for that final at bat, that's my concern. So if he's not who he was at the plate last year and he even has a 10% decrease, you stack that onto the at bats, and I'm off Dominic Smith for where he's going. If he was going at a decent price, but I think he's going, he's going somewhere where a lot of people have him for 550 at bats, and I have struggles seeing him get there. And Brandon Nimmo is the same thing. It's just Brandon Nimmo is just Brandon Nimmo is Brandon Nimmo. Like, people, that's, you know what? If you would slap Brandon Nimmo's hype on Jeff McNeil, people would be taking Jeff McNeil in the second round. Like, that's just how ridiculous it is. People want Brandon Nimmo to be good.
I know that. Why? Just because he's going to lead off because in what could be a good lineup. And I just hear about him all the time, but I don't know. I'm underwhelmed.
It's because he's got spirit and he comes from Wyoming where nobody ever nobody was watching him in high school and blah, blah, blah. And all, I don't know. It's the fun story stuff, I guess. I don't know. I have Brandon Nimmo down one spot behind Adam Eaton at 70. That's the perfect example. I have him for 451 at bats. I have Dominic Smith for 490 and he's at 53.
Yeah. I don't mind.
And that's the biggest thing. Like, I'd rather take Jock Peterson than Dominic Smith.
Yeah, he's had a good spring too. He's going to get playing time. I'm just looking at Dominic Smith and seeing, so there's a huge, look at the wide range of outcomes when it comes to Dominic Smith. Wow, I'm just noticing this on NFBC. So min pick 68, Jake, 68. And then max 203. Like, everybody in around Dominic Smith, I'm just going to rattle them off. Mike Moustakas, Charlie Morton, Dylan Bundy, Contreras, Carlos Carrera, Simeon, Musgrove, Chris Bryant, Lance McCullers, Dylan Moore. All of these guys, none of them have a min pick below 68. None of them. Carlos Carrera.
I would take all of them.
60. The rest, look, Dominic Smith. Wow. So people, you're right. People are really, they're either in on him and they're willing to reach and grab him, or there's others that they see the min or the max at 203. And all those guys that I mentioned, none of them have a max of 200. Like, that's the only guy here is McCullers, and he's a pitcher, 170. The rest are, it's a bit of a tighter group here. This is crazy. Yeah, 68. And guys are going after him, like Alex Verdugo. I think I'd rather have him. I know it doesn't look like he's going to hit leadoff, but he may at times. So Kiki Hernandez is in there.
The biggest thing is, if you put him on pace last year, he's over 30 home runs. He's about 32, 33. My biggest thing is, do we really think Dominic Smith is an over 300 hitter? I don't. And that's really what it comes down to. Like, you can find 30 home runs and a 270-ish average a lot of places now. So I would take, I would take every single one of those guys. Did you say Dylan Carlson too?
No, but I am in on Carlson, especially what
because now Bader got hurt.
Yeah, and I said this, I think, to Matty Wood when we did again bring up Matty. We did a preview. He was the first one I did, and I just he's did a lot of high stakes, and I wanted to get thoughts on Carlson. And we both thought that he over time could potentially lead off in that lineup if he can get his average and on plate skills, a little decent. I think it's still possible, and maybe it's even more so now. But even if he does hit in the five or six, he's going to have guys in that lineup to drive in. He's got a little bit of power and speed too.
So I just realized this too. Dominic Smith was 11th in BABIP last year at 368.
Well, there's another red flag.
Yeah, around DJ LeMahieu, Freddie Freeman, Yastrzemski, Tim Anderson, Adames, Azuna. He's not those. Oh my God. Conforto was 412. I didn't even realize for Conforto's was that high last year. Conforto was the only one over 400. Maybe we need to pull back Conforto a little bit.
But yeah, most projections have Dominic Smith around the 250, 260. Like, I agree. Yeah. He's not even a 280 hitter, in which he did hit in 2019. But again, small sample size, only 197 games. Okay.
But I'm McNeil. I'm on Conforto, Alonzo, obviously Lindor. I will obviously take it. But all this being said, we skipped over the one. I am taking J.D. Davis in a lot of places because the Mets didn't address the third base position. And I know they're still trying and they're still looking at it and they're still thinking about it. And there was Chris Bryant rumors and Nolan Arenado rumors. And then they made the trade for Lindor, and then Bryant popped back up again. But I don't think they're happy having J.D. Davis there because of his defensive liabilities. But if he could just be average defensively, I think J.D. Davis, you get 500 at bats from J.D. He is the third baseman. Like, they're swapping Villar all the time. Villar is even not a natural third baseman. So, maybe if you want to argue the Dominic Smith scenario for J.D. Davis at third, and I get it, but when you're giving me J.D. Davis in reserve rounds for a $0, $1 bid, or, in the 20ths, I'm going to take that every single time. I own a ton of J.D. Davis.
And he's basically, to your point, he's basically free, right? The ADP for him is 266, so, or 260. So I have, yeah, no issues with JD too. Let's wrap up with this pitching staff, and then we'll get like a target or a couple of your bold takes there. So the pitching staff, we kind of touched on the top of it, but there's, you know, some interesting arms here in Taiwan Walker, who's dealt with some things, but I thought in his short little stint with the Blue Jays last year, he showed something. I thought they should have brought him back. Dave Peterson, a lot of guys were talking about him. Joey Lucchesi, is that Nando's guy? Nando likes some Joey Lucchesi. I do too, actually, at times. I remember writing him up and Nando editing the article, like, I like this guy. He's one of my faves. But
I traded for Lucchesi and he got hurt the very next week. So
he showed some signs with the Padres. I talk about him DFS sometimes. He can strike out some dudes. But anyone in the back of that rotation that piques your interest?
I've been getting a lot of Taiwan Walker. It's somebody else. That's actually somebody who was hyped for his talent, and somebody who has shown flashes before. And then again, abbreviated season. I'm not overweighting it to say this, but 2.7 ERA last year. You know, the strikeouts were decent, not great, but the biggest concern, and I'm looking at his entire career, is the biggest concern is the home runs, and the home runs really get to him, or really get him in trouble when he gets too many people on base and gives them up. He's never going to be 10K per nine, but he was better at attacking pitchers or pitchers at batters and being smart. He seems like somebody that got, you know, his good comparison is Luis Severino at the beginning of his career before he became elite. He was somebody that it seemed like he kind of lost his confidence when people got on base. And maybe that was in the back of his head, is that, oh my God, I can't give up another home run with people on base. I think Taiwan Walker has gotten around that. So again, I'm not buying into a 2.7 ERA, but as in somebody that I have in the 50s, what's funny is I was actually looking at my rankings, and with that injury to Carrasco, I have Carrasco and Taiwan Walker back to back at 51 and 52. And then I didn't even notice this. I have Syndergaard at 63 and Stroman at 64 back to back. Mostly nice. because the ratios, you know what? Stroman could vastly outperform that, but you know, it's the whip. It's Stroman's whip that just kills it for me. He doesn't strike out enough to make up for the fact of carrying a 1-3 whip.
I know. I'm a Stroman guy. Like I would like to see him make that. Yeah, I would like to see him make that next step, that leap that you were talking about earlier. I like the Taiwan Walker call. I think it's worth it. It's not going to cost a whole lot. There's some upside. I think the biggest takeaway for me last year was the fact that he pitched 53 innings, right? You mentioned the command and the homers have definitely been an issue with him. He's a fly ball pitcher. But the fact that, I mean, one inning in 2019, 13 in 2018. So it was just encouraging to see him with the Jays show some flashes of, you know, that highly touted prospect that we were waiting to see for years. There's one start, I'm looking at the game log, one start against the Phillies, you know, he went 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, struck out 8. Game against the Dodgers, right? A team in the Dodgers that, you know, doesn't strike out a lot. AK, 4 hits, 3 runs, 7 innings. Oakland, yep. AK, 1 hit in 7 innings, 0 runs. So he at least showed those flashes. Then there's other outings, you know, the 5 walks and bombs, you know, that happened against the Yankees, Red Sox. So those are going to happen, but not as much this year pitching in the NL. Okay, so on the way out, give us some targets. Give us a little sneak peek of some bold predictions, some targets. Yeah, your guys.
Yeah, so you got. I got to update my bold prediction on Carlos Carrasco. That's not happening anymore. I just realized I said he was going to be SP1. That was fun about a month ago. Not so much anymore.
Not anymore.
Which, by the way, go to the closers. And this one looks great already. I said no reliever was going to reach 40 saves this year. That's nice with all of a sudden losing 3 closers before even the season starts. But in this, so yeah, I did my guys. I collected the staff's pick, and people were like, where are yours? And I was like, I kind of felt like I did mine because two of the guys that are in my bold prediction, one is, I said Nick Madrigal is going to be a top 100 hitter this year, mostly because he's another one that not so much to 2020, but similar to this whole conversation we're having. Remember where Nick Madrigal was going last year because of the hype, because of the excitement. And then he disappointed tremendously, but there's no question about it. But still, 30-plus steals are easy for this guy. And if he just comes to a relative level of his ability, he should be a top 100 hitter with a decent lineup around him. I mean, everybody's excited about this team. But, you know, 300-plus hitter, 30-plus stolen bases, a top 100 hitter just by those two alone. So he was one that was in there. And then I'll bring up somebody else that I just mentioned before, Chris Bryant. I really do think so. This is what I tweeted out. So I'm going to tell you, Chris, right now, because I mentioned your team in this. I'm taking Anthony Rendon 10 times out of 10. Every single, there's no question. I'm not saying Rendon and Bryant are on the same level. My point about the tweet was I don't see a 7-round difference. You're telling me 7 rounds? Because this is what I said. Since before 2020, so throwing out 2020, because that's what everybody's focused on with Chris Bryant. And I understand the injuries are a factor too, but 7 rounds is a big difference. Yes. If you told me 4 or 5, sure. But for the 4 seasons where they both played 136 games, because Rendon missed time too in there for the 1 season. Yep. But if you take their 2 seasons or 2 4-season samples, 300 at bats or 300 average for Rendon, 286 for Bryant, 26 home runs average for Rendon, 31 for Bryant, 94 runs, 106 for Bryant, 101 is RBI, so Rendon's better there, 88 for Bryant, and then 7 stolen bases to 8. You're up and down in categories that almost equally come across the same for 5 categories. Again, I'm not saying Chris Bryant's going to do that this season and be 286, 31, 106, 8, but 7 rounds? I'm taking Chris Bryant every single time, and I have Chris Bryant on a ton of my teams and 0 Anthony Rendon.
Well, to your point, one goes inside the top 40 picks and the other one's going outside the top 100. And we've seen the upside from Brian. It's just been some injuries. I don't know if producer Rob is available to talk on the mic. He's a big Cubs guy. I don't know what the over under on remaining games would be for Chris Bryant to in a Cubs uniform, but I like that pick because it's the upside that we've seen before, Jake. We know like a couple years ago, like the steep price. So I have no problem jumping on the value.
Well, before, if Rob wants to jump real quick. So I love Robles for a bounce back. He's another one. Victor Robles. Everybody was all over him last year and then disappoints. It's like,
still super young too and a ton of wheels.
Yes. Victor Robles, Charlie Morton. I love Charlie Morton with the Braves now.
And another disrespect. Like, nobody wants to give him any respect. Yeah.
I have him so many places. And then for my breakout pitcher, and this is somebody who is touted, so this shouldn't be a surprise, but I do think that Julio Urias gets into the top 25 this year.
Yeah. It's about time, right? It's the one thing with the Dodgers, though, is are they going to let him? Are they going to let the leash off? But I agree. I think that
he gets 150 innings, he'll be in the top 25.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I like the Madrigal call, too. He's a stud, man. It doesn't strike out, and he's hit everywhere across all levels.
And all you need is like 100 stolen bases, and you win your category this year.
Is
like,
it
nobody steals anymore.
To draft an entire White Sox squad? Probably not. Because Robert and a lawyer are going to go like really close to each other, and you're going to grab me. You would be tough to get both, but I love.
I mean, you'd have to get Giolito, Jimenez.
You have to go Giolito Robert, first, like, and back, then back, like a back. Abreu. It's tough. You'd miss out on probably two of Abreu, Aloy.
I don't know if you could do them all 4 rounds in a row. That'd be you might have to like trade in for one of those. Get them all in that range.
I'm fine with it. They're great. They're going to score some runs.
But I tell you what. You want to contend in stolen bases easily and not take Mondesi because you're worried about what Mondesi is going to do.
Right.
Get Robles in the middle rounds and get Madrigal in the late rounds.
And then you're
boom,
set.
You just got yourself 50 stolen bases right there.
Yeah, and Mondesi is going to kill your average, and at least Madrigal won't. He's going to get
if you play on base percentage, he's going to murder that. Forget about kill. He's going to bury that 20 feet deep.
Absolutely. Jake, I guess we went over 30 minutes.
Of course.
But that's what we do, man. We get talking. We didn't even get talking about the bets. You're hot fire lately with some of your bets. You're killing it.
Oh, college basketball. That's the only game. I screw everything else. Screw hockey. I curse everything. NBA, I curse everything. I need football to come back. That's the thing.
Yeah, all your money's on Washington. That's what you need. Who would have said that 3 years ago? Washington and then Jacksonville. You and I were chatting.
I told you. I told you that $20 bet on the Jaguars to win the Super Bowl, I'm holding that. And everybody calls me crazy for throwing away $20. People were saying
it's
that about
bucks.
The Steelers when they drafted. Yeah, and they drafted Ben Roethlisberger. Just saying.
Yeah, that's right. Jake, always a pleasure, man. It's great to talk to you. We were always communicating back and forth, but I appreciate you jumping on the show here today. Give Jake a follow if you don't already, All In Kid, and check out all of his work. He is constantly, as you can tell throughout this show, updating, probably doing it right now as I'm talking. He is updating live holds and whip on Marcus Stroman. Appreciate it, Jake. Take care. And thanks to everybody out there for watching this video. We will be back talking to you guys tomorrow about the St. Louis Cardinals.